Did you ever think about living in space? Well, in the future, there are those of us who will venture forth with others to become colonists on the moon or maybe on Mars. They'll become the future spacefarers, colonists in space. But what about becoming part of a space settlement somewhere in the far reaches of space, beyond our solar system, around some alien star in the distant cosmos? Can this be possible? Well, many of the close stars beyond our system are hundreds and even thousands of light years away, and one light year is 6 trillion miles. It seems that this idea of interstellar colonization is far beyond our technological capability. But maybe there is a way of accomplishing this seemingly impossible feat. Maybe we can establish space settlements around distant stars with our developing technology. Our guest on Contours has interesting ideas as to how this can be accomplished. Our guest, Mark Hopkins, serves as the chairman of the Executive Committee for the National Space Society. He's written numerous publications concerning space economics and is responsible for most of the early economic studies of space settlements, including the economic study in the NASA publication Space Settlements. Welcome to our program Contours, Mark.
Thank you, Carl.
So, how can we create settlements in interstellar space?
Well, the traditional route has been that it's very difficult because you have to develop extremely advanced propulsion systems, which will allow you to go very fast. Even if you let's assume there's no way to go faster than the speed of light. Put some parameters on this. However, there may be a way to reduce the difficulty by many orders of magnitude, and this is due to two factors. The first is that when people have thought about doing settlements in the past in interstellar space, what they're doing, what they're thinking about doing, is looking for an Earth-like planet to put their settlement on. Well, Earth-like planets are fairly rare, and to find the closest one, you probably, you know, after let's say you find it with probes or something, you probably have to travel a substantial distance. However, there is a way to settle almost any star, which means that we can settle the closest stars. And works like this. With our own solar system, there is enough material to build in-space settlements. And the way these work is you can make a cylinder, which is like 10 miles long or so, a cylindrical shell. On the inside, you put an atmosphere. And you contour the inside to be a very nice place to live with rivers and trees and forests.
That's like a city in space.
even more than a city in space. It's like land area in space. Gerard O'Neill was the one who really pushed this concept in the modern world.
Oh, Gerard O'Neill, huh?
Uh-oh. Yes. And then you can spin the cylindrical shell so as to give you due to centrifugal force, the effects of artificial gravity on the inside, and you can bring in sunlight by various means. So you really have a nice place to live. The reason this is important for this particular discussion is that there's enough material in the solar system, if you in say the asteroids alone, to build enough of these things so that you increase the land surface area that the human race would have by about 1,000 times greater than the land surface area of the Earth. Now, an interesting thing about this is that if you can then develop nice places for humanity to live and settle anywhere on any star, as long as they have, you know, cometary and asteroidal material. They don't need an Earth-like planet. And according to the best knowledge we have of other star systems, virtually every star system is likely to have asteroids and cometary material, at least, if not planets. And so this means that we can probably settle the area around the closest star, which is actually a group of three stars, the Alpha, the Centauri system. And hence, we'd only have to go 4.3 light years in order to do interstellar settlement, rather than say 100 light years to get to the closest stellar system which has an Earth-like planet. So that's point one.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to put ourselves into a state of suspended animation, or have several generations of people live on board a spacecraft until we finally arrived at our destination.
Yes, and it would also mean that you could, if you're going to take, say, 20 years to get there, you can go a lot slower to Alpha Centauri than something which is much further away, which puts a lot less stress on a lot less need to have an advanced propulsion system.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that's point one. Point two is the following. Let's say you're interested in doing this. What will and let's say we're talking, say, 100 years in the future.
Yeah.
And you ask yourself, what kind of technology would we have available 100 years in the future before we actually start a program aimed at building starships? So what is sort of the natural drift of technology without pushing it hard in one direction or another?
Mm.
And you look at what's happening, the technologies which are growing very fast and are likely, according to everybody's thoughts about the future, continue to grow for the foreseeable future very fast, are things like computers and artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, bioengineering, things like this. I call those the can-be technologies. Propulsion technology, particularly propulsion technology relevant to starships, is developing much slower. So the thought was, if we're going to build or do a starship program 100 years from now, what we should do is think about building one which is based on the technologies which are likely to be available then. And those are much advanced, can-be technologies, and relatively modestly advanced propulsion technologies. So what does this mean? Okay, the thought is, using can-be technologies, we can send very small payloads to a star in order to settle it. Rather than having a ship like you see on Star Trek, where you have 400 people, let's send a payload which is like 1 gram, or
1 gram. How would you do that?
Okay, here's the deal. There's several approaches. The easiest approach in terms of the technology would be to send a probe. Send your starship, and on the starship you would have nanites, which are very small robots which are built on the atomic level.
Whoa.
They are just a few atoms. As a consequence, they weigh almost nothing. And these nanites can reproduce and build up increasing numbers of nanites. And you can also program them to do various things. So you send a few nanites, and you send some, and you have a lot of information in your computer. And you also send some human eggs and sperm. When the nanites get to the other star system, they use asteroidal materials, etc., to expand the number of nanites greatly. And then after that's done, you start using the nanites, which are programmed using the information in your computer, to build an industrial civilization. And after you've got your industry up to a sufficient state, then you fertilize the eggs, and some humans are born, and these are the first humans which are then at your new space settlement.
How long would that take?
Not counting the trip to the star, you're talking about maybe say 40 years before the humans are born?
Yeah, it wouldn't be immediate settlement, obviously. You'd have to wait until the eggs are fertilized and they develop into human beings.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
And you'd have to build your industrial civilization before that. However,
yeah,
that's pretty fast, because the nanites can multiply at a very fast rate. And so that doesn't take much time. And then they have to build at least a rudimentary settlement
have to set up some kind of government and social system and things like that, I would imagine.
Well, of
the
course.
Beginning. Yeah, yeah.
That would be true of any
yeah,
human.
Sure,
government.
Sure. Wow, that's
it. And then you can push that, you know, that's relatively straightforward technology. I mean, current technology to fertilize human eggs, and there's tens of thousands of people born every year using that approach. And among, say, cattle, most cattle these days in advanced countries are born using artificial insemination.
I remember reading one of your articles, and you had mentioned something else going beyond the idea of reproductive cells to the idea of setting up DNA.
If you push the technology harder, the can-be technologies, which I think is likely in 100 years, then you can make your payloads even smaller. And one of the nice things about having a small payload is then it's much easier to accelerate it to the speed you want. Again, resulting in not having to have as advanced concepts of propulsion as otherwise would be the case. But anyway, for example, instead of using fertilized eggs and sperm, what you could do, in theory anyway, is to simply send human DNA, which would make a much smaller payload.
No, certainly. Wow.
And then use the human DNA at the other side once you have developed a settlement to the point where it has the technology necessary give birth to human beings and start your settlement.
We're talking to our guest on Contours, Mark Hopkins, who serves as chairman of the executive committee for the National Space Society, and we're talking about the idea of setting up space settlements, interstellar space settlements beyond our own system and even beyond the nearby stars. What can be done to do that? And we're getting into information about the advancing technology in the area of nanotechnology and bioengineering and so on and so forth. And so setting up a small package that weighs maybe a gram or something like that rather than the actual adult human beings to these areas would be the way to go to save on expenses for this kind of mission.
You're right. And you can push the technology even further. There's some reason to believe that eventually, human minds can be uploaded into a computer, and then downloaded into a different body or something.
Oh, that could be done on Earth too. As a matter of fact, and it could be prolonging your life to that extent. I would imagine.
Well, yeah. I mean, this technology, if it develops, will be developed first on Earth and be used for lots of reasons on the Earth.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, that means you can send humans along these trips. To the stars, simply as stored in a computer, effectively, and then when you get to the other side, you can use the humans in the computer to program and run the nanites and the production, and later when you have human bodies which are produced using approaches I've already mentioned, you download the minds into the new human bodies. That's a way of taking potential settlers who are alive at the time that the mission starts to be the actual settlers on the other side.
I imagine you have to have protection against the rigors of space, including what radiation and things of that sort.
Oh, absolutely.
That kind
and
of
the way you do that in the case of things stored in a computer is you just duplicate the information many times in the computer so that if some of the information gets scrambled, you can correct it using. So if you have like 100 copies and one copy gets messed up a little bit, then you use the other 99 copies.
So before you take the trip, you have to make a contract with the Geek Squad, I suppose, in case something goes wrong with the computer.
You definitely need to have high technology and lots of protections for the trip. There's also another way.
What's that?
Even more fascinating. If you can upload into a computer, like I've already said,
yeah,
then you could potentially beam a person to a different star system, assuming there is a receiver there. So what you do is you send the nanites, et cetera, out, and they build up this industrial civilization and a settlement and a receiver. And then you take the information in the computer, which is, you know, effectively the human, beam it across interstellar space at the speed of light to the receiver on the other end, and then they take this information, put it in another computer, and then they download it into a body which has been produced along the lines I've already mentioned.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, how long do you think it would take before this kind of technology would be developed?
The earliest technology, which I'm talking about, you could probably do in 100 years, which is the human eggs and sperm.
Yeah.
Because that's we already have the human eggs and sperm. You have to figure out ways to protect it better than we have now against space radiation, because we haven't really worried about that. But that's fairly straightforward. And what you're really doing is you're pushing the technology with nanites. And I think in 100 years you might be able to do that with nanites and artificial intelligence.
Hmm. Now, this bypasses the idea of developing the propulsion system necessary to reach those places carrying humans themselves. And I would imagine maybe there might be some development of our propulsion system.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
system.
You still need – it would still be very useful to have improvements in technology of propulsion. And that will happen in the next 100 years. But you don't need really exotic stuff which can – anywhere near, you're several orders of magnitude less difficulty.
Yeah. So it's easier that way than to count on developing our technology in the way of propulsion systems. Even though in some of these sci-fi kind of renditions, there's the idea of the warping of space in order to arrive at your destination over a shorter period of time. But I don't think we can see that anywhere on the horizon.
Well, the big problem with that is, according to the best analysis that physicists have done today, it's theoretically impossible.
Oh, okay.
Now, that doesn't mean we won't figure out some way to do it sometime, but at the moment it's theoretically impossible.
Yeah,
that's why
yeah.
I said let's assume we're not going to do the warp drives because it's theoretically impossible. The rest of this is theoretically possible, and it's just a little engineering problem. I'm being somewhat facetious when I say that. It's a big engineering problem.
Yeah.
But at least it's theoretically possible. And also, the technology, most of the technology I'm talking about, with regards to fertilizing eggs and nanites and stuff like that, will probably be developed anyway, even if there isn't a Starship program over the next 100 years for other reasons. And so the cost of your Starship program is dramatically less, because you can take, for a lot of us, technology which already exists anyway.
Yeah. So people... in the present day, then, can volunteer the reproductive cells into getting set up in some kind of program of the nature that you're talking about, in that nature, in that way, in terms of maybe whenever the nanotechnology and the bioengineering is developed, their eggs and sperm would be ready to go.
I don't know. There's a... With today's technology, there's a time limit on how long you can store eggs.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
So you probably couldn't do that with today's technology. However, if you pushed it a little bit, I mean, it probably wouldn't be that hard to develop technology which would be able to store such things for, you know, several hundred years. They just haven't done it because there's no need at the moment.
There's
not a lot of people saying, demanding in the marketplace to have their sperm and eggs around for more than, you know, say 30 years or so.
Well, what about the DNA then, a la Jurassic Park or something of that sort?
Well, DNA is, that's not,
yes.
We don't know how to store DNA of a
gene. Oh, okay, I see.
For a long period of time.
I see.
Actually, I'm not sure about that. I don't know how long you can store DNA. But again, that's something which, if there was a demand to store it for a long period of time, you could. Actually, that shouldn't be a problem. Now that I think about it, you could probably take current human DNA and store it for long periods of time.
Yeah.
Several hundred years, even with current technology.
Sure. Wow. Well, our interview has come to an end, and I want to thank you. Mark Hopkins has been our guest on Contours, and he serves as chairman on the executive committee for the National Space Society. And we've been talking about developing settlements in interstellar space by using technology that will be developed more than likely about maybe, 20, 40 years in the future or something of that nature?
Depending on the technology we're talking about, for the most part, I'm talking about 100 years in the future.
100 years. Oh, okay.
And let me add one thing. If you want more information about this,
sure.
You can go to the website of the National Space Society, which you can find by Googling the National Space Society. And when you get to our homepage, search for the space movement. And under that section, there is a number of articles and columns and stuff, and a couple of them cover the material I just said.
Well, thank you very much, Mark Hopkins. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you, Carl.